Coming up today, we have a special bonus show. We have the one and only Nathan Firesheets joining us to tell us about the very first completion of the Every Ride Coast to Coast Challenge. That's coming up today on this special episode of Traveling with the Mouse. Welcome everyone to today's show. Today is episode 242. It is Friday, November the 8th, and we have a very special Friday episode of Traveling with the Mouse. We are joined today by Nathan Firesheets, who's going to tell us everything we need to know about his Coast to Coast Challenge. But before we get started, let me introduce you to my co-host. I am Jason, and I am joined by Adam.
What's up, everybody?
And John.
I'm just really happy to be here this evening.
We're really happy you could make it too, John.
Yes.
Maybe more importantly than my co-host today, we are joined on the line by Nathan Firesheets. A Coaster Story is his Twitter handle. Welcome, Nathan.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're very happy you're here too. We were following along. I will say I was working during those days. You had a very exciting, not 2 days, but more like 4 days, it looked like, last week as you attempted the Every Ride Coast to Coast Challenge.
Yeah, basically treated Sunday as kind of a practice day to get a feel for a couple strategy plays I wanted to do. Used that to develop my strategy for Monday, ended up failing miserably, and then moved all my flights and everything to give another crack at it on Tuesday. Was able to do Disneyland on Tuesday, Red Eye to Orlando, and then did Disney World on Wednesday.
Wow, that is... a lot.
Yeah, functionally 3 days in a row at Disneyland, and then a red eye, and then Disney World. It was quite a week.
I don't know how you're alive right now, but yeah. I'm glad you are, and I'm glad you made it. I'm pretty sure everyone who's probably listening to this episode probably knows what this challenge is, but in case you somehow stumbled here and don't, the challenge is, of course, to ride every moving ride at both Disneyland and Disney World in back-to-back days. And so on your challenge, Nathan, that was 94 rides in, I think, 2 days, and that totaled out to, what was it?
36 hours and 4 minutes.
36 hours and 4 minutes if you include hops. And one of those hops was from California to Orlando.
Just a small hop.
Yeah.
So I don't think we should start with that challenge because I think you have a pretty storied history. I don't think this is a challenge for people who are just getting started at attempting every ride or Parkeology.
I would not recommend this as a jumping off point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've had a pretty storied history. You've done Disneyland multiple times, oxygen-free, Disney World, oxygen-free on Star Wars Galaxy's opening day, and you have other Disney World completions after that as well. Tell us a little bit about your history and why you even started doing the challenge in the first place.
I'm not exactly sure when I first became aware of the Parkeology challenge as a thing, but I know that somewhere prior to my visit to Disneyland in June of last year, 2018, I was aware of it, and I knew enough to be dangerous, but not really enough to really know what I was doing. And I walked into Disneyland on a Sunday in June of 2018, 15 minutes after rope drop, because I underestimated how long it was going to take to get there from the parking lot. I had no plan. I didn't know how many rides there were, but I walked in and I saw a Main Street vehicle in front of me. And I went, oh, that's the thing that always trips up people when they're running these challenges in Orlando. Let me jump on it. And I jumped on it, and I was like, well, let's try to see like how many rides I can do today. I don't know how many rides there are, but let's just try it. And so that was a day spent going around trying to ride everything. I didn't know how many rides there were. I had no plan. You know, I mean, I'd been to Disneyland a couple times before, but it was a very, very new thing. You know, my phone died at like 4 or 5 o'clock. I was woefully underprepared, but I ended up riding 50 of the 51 rides, and I only missed Radiator Springs Racers because it broke down right before I got to it, right before the park closed. Otherwise, I might have actually ridden there. I mean, it wouldn't have counted, but that was kind of my first thing, and I was like, okay, like, I can do this.
How do you think you would have fared if you had stumbled into Disney World with no plan? Because I think Orlando would have been, that's a different animal, right?
Yeah, so getting ahead of myself a little bit, but I did do functionally kind of that this spring. After my kind of sort of attempt-ish last summer, I went back in November, like the week before Thanksgiving, and I ran Saturday and Sunday and did back-to-back completions at Disneyland. My first real official attempts of any kind. I did it Saturday, got done. I was like, okay, great. And then I got up the next day, felt good enough, decided to go for it again, just for grins and giggles. So got, I think that was the first ever back-to-back. So that was November. And then I was like, okay, what do I want to do with myself for theme park stuff for 2019? Because I didn't really have a plan. I'd done a bunch of international travel, a bunch of stuff all over the U.S. last year. I was like, what do I want to do? I know. I'll take this year and I'll take a bunch of cracks at the Parkeology, try Disney World, you know, maybe come back to Disneyland, you know, and just basically have that be my thing for the year. And I had a work trip to Orlando in March that I used as my kind of first jumping off point. Went in, didn't really have a plan. That was my first time being at Disney World since before Seven Dwarfs had opened. And it was just a miserable, abject failure of a day. I haven't pulled up, you know, like what that looked like, but it was just, it was bad. And then I gave it another couple attempts in the following days and weeks. But again, it was really more kind of practice running versus legitimately thinking I had a chance at completion. Because I didn't know the parks.
You said that was in March that you ran your first time?
Yeah, my first time in Orlando.
That was our first run too, Jason and I.
Yeah, we ran in March our first time as well. How many did we do?
36.
Yeah, we did 36 on our first attempt.
Yeah. So I did 22. I started at Animal Kingdom. I got there later than what I needed to make Flight of Passage rope. Because I didn't understand how early you actually needed to be there for Flight of Passage rope. And then I got to Studios in the afternoon, and I didn't understand how FastPass Plus worked, or, you know, the strategy for that, and I just slogged through Studios. It took me 4 hours to do Studios, and then I had a later run that I did Studios in 1 hour and 15 minutes. You know, yeah. Shows the difference that makes. And then I kind of just gave up at the end of the night and went back and rode Flight of Passage for my first time. I had another run shortly after that where I lost my keys getting out of an Uber.
And I remember that. I remember following along on that run.
Yeah. And so that went, I mean, it wasn't destined for any kind of success, but that kind of, you know, that kind of made me stop short and kind of give up from there. Then the next one after that, which I think was the next day, I got a good start. I grailed Animal Kingdom in a hair over 2 hours. Yeah, rope drop, Flight of Passage, Navi, Safari, Everest, Primeval World, back when, hey, that was still a thing. Triceratop, Dino, and then Cali right after it opened, because it didn't open until 10. And did that. It made it back over to Magic and was just kind of cranking through stuff at Magic. And then my phone just died on Splash. It just shut itself off. Like, it didn't get wet. It just turned off and would not turn back on. So at that point, you know, I couldn't have done anything. I couldn't pull fast passes. I couldn't call an Uber. So I just kind of bailed on that. So again, my first several runs in Orlando were not good.
Yeah. And I remember we ran with you in June that day, that same day. That was the day of our infamous 2 minutes shy of a completion.
Yeah. That day went better for me, I think. Was that June 1st?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that one I finished with 43. And that one I was doing really good on until I got back to Magic. At the end of the night, I managed to pull a space fast pass and went to go get in line for it and waited in a longer return line than what I should have had. And then I get right up to where I'm going to be the next person on it. And they have some kind of catastrophic breakdown where they let everybody stew there for a little while and didn't really tell anybody what was going on. And then they finally were like, yeah, we're going to have to evac the ride. And somebody that's on the ride was a disability guest. So that was going to be a whole huge mess. And by that point, like, I was already 20, 25 minutes in, invested in that return line, plus however long I'd stood there, you know, while they were deciding what they were going to do. And then finally I was able to bail, and I got a multi to come back later. But that just kind of, that threw me off so far. I couldn't do that. And then People Mover went down, and it came back up a little bit, then went back down again. And I couldn't really recover from that. So finished four short that day: Space, People Mover, Pirates, and Seven Dwarfs, which was going to be the last one.
Yeah, I think we all remember our one we didn't get to ride.
That one, that was brutal.
Yeah, I almost got to be where I hated Haunted Mansion Forever, and we're going to get to that where you almost got to hate Haunted Mansion Forever.
At Disney.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, you did a lot of tries at Disney World, but I think the one that Adam and I are very interested in hearing about from your history before this was that your first Disney World completion came on none other than Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opening day, and that was with no fast passes, one of only two people to complete Disney World oxygen-free.
Actually, I believe there was a third one on September 11th.
Oh,
I think
yes,
one of those
right.
teams was also oxygen-free. But both of the other oxygen-free runs were on 18-hour days, and the Galaxy's Edge opening day was a 16-hour day.
Is that 16-hour including the fact that they open an hour early?
So it depends on how you define this. So if you define it as, you know, they opened an hour early to the latest park closing, then it would have been 17. But my strategy ended at a park that ended an hour sooner. So, like, my first ride to last ride was really closer to 15:42, I think. It was under 16 hours that I did it in.
Yeah, I was going to say, but if needed, you had added 17 hours.
Depending on the strategy, yeah. So, could you set the scene for us? You were telling us a little bit before we started, but what was it like, and how early did you get there for the Galaxy's Edge rope drop, and what on earth was that stampede like trying to get in there?
I mean, what on Batuu was it like?
Sorry, excuse me.
Exactly.
Well, the only word that I really have to describe it was terrifying. Yeah. You're talking tens of thousands of people in a giant mob mass all trying to push towards this goal. And for some reason, the way that Disney decided to run that was to let everybody in one giant mass of tens of thousands of people with no real good plan. It felt so disorganized. Like, I was worried that people were going to get trampled and seriously hurt. There was somebody near me that had their flip-flop stepped on, ripped off their foot, and lost in the crowd. You know, it's not like you can stop and go back and get it when you've got all those people pushing and shoving. Scott Kumka, who's another challenge runner, was next to me in the crowd. And the way the crowd was kind of pushing, like, the surge from behind you is just throwing you, and you're bouncing off of people, and there's nothing you can do about it except just apologize profusely. But some guy next to him took offense to Scott's bouncing off of him and punched him.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was just one of those, like, just, it was a really horrible experience. What they needed to have done was pulsed the crowd through. I'll kind of back up a little bit. I started trying to line up around 3 a.m. or slightly before. I'd heard through the grapevine from somebody that I know that knows people that they were planning to open an hour early. So I wanted to make sure that I was there and ready, but then they decided that they were going to block off the parking lot, which they've never done ever. Then people were reportedly lining up on the boardwalk, and that was the only place you could get in. And so I actually went and drove by the entrance to the parking lot to see what the deal was, and yeah, so that wasn't happening. Ended up pulling a Yui through the median to get out of there because the road was basically blocked. There was nowhere to go. Ended up driving to the Contemporary, and for some reason, the person at the guard shack decided to let me in for my breakfast reservation 6 hours before my breakfast reservation.
Oh. Wow.
Then I was able
generous.
To... Yeah, I Ubered from the Contemporary to the Boardwalk Hotel and then walked down the boardwalk to catch up with kind of the crowd that was being held and was able to kind of get up into that mess when they started releasing people. Now, they had promised the people that were lined up at the boardwalk since 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock the night before that they were going to be the first people in the land and they were going to be kind of walked in and all this stuff. None of that happened. Those people that were there lined up, they got stampeded past and they got nothing for their effort. And it was just, it was really disappointing because they had a bunch of CMs telling them stuff that they didn't deliver on. And they were very angry when they got to the kind of the next hold point. And then that was still well before they actually got anywhere close to the ride. I would be shocked if any of them were actually on the ride within the first half hour.
Oh, wow.
But when they released that crowd under the bridge was the same time that they also started letting cars into the lot. Buses showed up. And there was no organization or anything. It was a free-for-all. As soon as you can get to a point where you can cut out of the side of the crowd and rush up the side, yeah, like that was your only route, like to try to kind of make it through. You get to security checkpoints, they're all a huge mess. You get through security and then you get to the tap stiles, and then there's just a holding and you just wait. And that whole area between security and the tap stiles was crammed with people very quickly. And then there were more people waiting to get into security to get through. And then eventually they released everybody through the tap stiles up onto, I don't know what the name of the main thoroughfare in studios is. I get them all confused.
Hollywood Boulevard.
Okay. Hollywood Boulevard.
So you get up to that point and you get to the spot where the first fork off to the left is. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of where they held people because they ended up taking everybody around the left side, making that very first left and doing kind of the curvy path around the...
So the one that kind of goes up almost toward 50s primetime then, sounds like. The very first one.
Yeah, it's the very first left was how they took people, which they didn't do any time since then. That was the only day that they took people this route. And that route had a bunch of spots where there were planters and things that kind of carved up the path, and so the crowd was being split around the planters, then recombined, and taken different routes, different paths, and then trying to match speed. And it was all very, very poorly done. But even before then, the issue was they let everybody through to the hold point and then held for 15 or 20 minutes and then moved up to the next hold point and held. And what they needed to have done was take everybody that was between the tap stiles and security and push them through the tap stiles to the first hold point, and then shut off the tap stiles, and then pull the next group of crowd through security to the tap stiles, then march the first crowd of people to the next holding point, and then let the following crowd of people come up through the tap stiles and break the crowd up so that you didn't end up with 30,000 people all pushing and shoving in one giant mob. But they didn't do that.
We're glad you survived it. That's all I can say.
I am glad. But it was like an hour and a half long process to actually get to the ride. And even when we got into Batu, they kept like narrowing and broadening, and there was just no rhyme or reason. And when we finally get to the ride, it looks like we're going to go straight to it, and then they take a hard turn and go around some planters. I ended up having to jump up onto a planter to avoid just like wiping out all over the thing. Because, it's just like, hey, and now we're suddenly turning and then shrinking, down to a two-person-wide funnel.
Oh, wow.
It's just every single aspect of it was terrible. But I ended up I was in the first pre-show, the third or fourth dispatch. It took a little longer than it should have because the people in front of us were more interested in taking pictures of the Falcon cockpit than actually riding it. All that to say, got on it at 5:05, then got off of it, got to Saucer, Slinky, Mania, Star Tours, Tower of Terror, and Rock and Roller Coaster at 6:28. So an hour and 23 minutes for all seven rides at studios, and then I was gone.
Wow.
That is interesting. I'm glad we didn't do that, Adam. I'm glad we didn't go do a rope drop on opening day.
Based on your description, it sounded like they actually split the crowd around Echo Lake as well. That's what it sounds like.
So what they did, I don't know if you're looking at a map of Echo Lake, they didn't split the crowd around Echo Lake. If you look kind of at the map in the app, around the right side to the bottom of Echo Lake, There's kind of two paths separated by some planters, and I think in real life there's actually like a vertical level difference. Yeah. They split the crowd around those, and then when they got past where the indie stunt show entrance is, they recombined them together before the path that went by Star Tours. It was a little bit better 2 days later when I ran on the 31st, but it still wasn't great, and I think that's mostly what they did since then. They kind of went further up, and they took a more direct route, but you were marched by stormtroopers, except they didn't actually start walking until the start of Extra Magic Hours, and it was like a 15-minute walk to the ride. So,
yeah,
not the best.
That's exactly how it does.
Yeah, that's why people stop roping it for the challenge.
Well, yeah, I mean, and two, it was nowhere near the same crowds at that point either. I mean, yeah. Not even close.
I was able to successfully rope drop it on the 31st and still walk on to Saucers and Slinky and everything else. Like on that one, I was on Smuggler's Run at 6:24 and Rock and Roller Coaster at 7:25. So it was 61 minutes first ride to last ride. It's probably the fastest that anybody's ever going to do that. And then just the very next day, when they changed the way the Extra Magic Hours were, the crowd going to Slinky was way worse, and you couldn't go to Smuggler's Run first and get on Slinky in any kind of reasonable time.
So you did all that. You decided that you weren't done yet, and you decided to do Coast to Coast. I'm assuming as soon as you got all these completions, you're thinking, okay, what's my next challenge? Coast to Coast pops up. We see Kitty the Pirate give a couple attempts at it. He even does one completion of Disneyland and makes the hop, but doesn't complete Disney World, which I will point out, we should congratulate Kenny for completing. He started the day after you did your first completion as well. How did you land on the days that you picked for the Coast to Coast challenge?
So what I did was I went, okay, right now, with the extra magic hours, the best days to complete in Orlando are Tuesdays. I want to do a Monday-Tuesday. That was kind of my goal. And then it was, okay, well, what can work with my work and life schedule and other things? And there was the end cap, with last week being the end of the extra magic hour window, and the worry that all the crowds and everything else were going to change. So it was, okay, it's got to be by then. I was actually wanting initially to do the week before, but I had another obligation that meant that wasn't going to be possible. So I settled on the week that I settled on, and then I get a little bit farther after having booked and locked that in, and I'm looking at crowd calendars and stuff and going, gee, Monday looks like it's a higher crowd than what I was expecting it to be. Tuesday looks like it might be dead. I wonder if I shouldn't switch to Tuesday-Wednesday instead of Monday-Tuesday. And I waffled back and forth with that for a very long time until I eventually decided to just try Monday, and then if that failed, changing to Tuesday is kind of the fallback plan.
So you did always have that in your back pocket then, and I think you mentioned in one of your videos you had backup fast passes at Disney World for Wednesday, right?
Correct. I'd had good fast passes for Tuesday at Disney World. I didn't have as good of fast passes for Wednesday, but still good enough to make work, which I did. You have a plan, and then you have a backup plan. What I didn't have was a backup plan for my backup plan, which I'm sure we'll get to here in a bit with the mansion incident. If I failed on Tuesday at Disneyland, I didn't have a backup plan.
Did you prepare any differently for this than you did for any of your other challenges? Like any extra stuff you had to do since you had to do a coastal hop? I mean, obviously you had to book flights.
Well, yeah, and that was one of the things that did play into the dates as well, was certain days of the week, certain flights are available that aren't available on other days. And I know that was one of the things that played into when Kenny did his runs, especially with the east to west, because they don't make those flights every day. So you're kind of boxed in a little bit by what flights are available, and you go, okay, well, I want to make sure that I'm getting you to Magic Kingdom in time for the 7 a.m. extra magic hour. That means that my only real option is the Delta flight that's a 10:20 to 6:03. But what that means is that 10:20 time puts a pretty hard finish cap on the Disneyland portion, where you don't have a whole lot of fluff time. But as far as preparation goes, I'd never done a speed run at Disneyland before. Like, I've always played with the whole operating day, because, you know, the stuff on the left half of the park is dead the last hour or two of the day because everybody's seeing Fantasmic or the fireworks show or all that jazz. So those are all walk-ons. So I don't stress about having to get those done early because I know I can walk onto those the last hour of the day. So my previous runs, you know, I was doing oxygen free, you know, or I even did over the summer where I rode all 70 or I did all 79 attractions in a day. So it was never about trying to get done as early in the day as possible. It was shoving more stuff in to kind of make it more complex. So this was my first ever attempt trying to do it fast. And so I didn't have necessarily the best idea for some of those things on exactly which order to do them. So I tried some stuff on Sunday and was also wary because Mansion was doing the holiday overlay and that jacked with the crowd flow to that as well. So I was like, okay, well, I need to go make sure I'm getting to Jungle Cruise and Pirates and Mansion early before they really build a crowd. But then that comes at the cost of other rides that are going to build a line that you have to deal with later. And so it's this, like, which ride do I rush to, you know, to get with a 5 minute or less wait that's going to have a 20 or 30 minute wait later at the expense of this other ride that I could have a 5 minute or less wait on now, but a 20 or 30 minute wait later? And which one is going to be more likely to have a shorter wait at some other point in the day that I can shave 10 or 15 minutes back off? Some of that is just kind of, you just kind of have to go for it and hope.
Yeah. I mean, I've considered doing this version of the challenge. I just don't have the time. But yeah, there sounds like there's a lot of moving parts there. And yes, getting done early is very difficult. And I think that's what happened your first day on that Monday. You had a few things that didn't go as planned. You called it early because you knew you weren't going to make your flight time. What was it that really threw you off that day? What threw you off on Monday?
When I was looking at Sunday, Golden Zephyr opened late due to wind, because it's the most wind-sensitive thing in California. Like, in Orlando, you have Test Track that's super sensitive to water. In California, Zephyr is super sensitive to wind. It closes most afternoons, 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, until 5 or 6 or later, just because the wind gets too high and they shut it down. It's got an alarm on it. It's, you know, there's no messing around with it. But California has been in a state of high winds, low humidity, you know, super fire conditions. And so on Sunday, Zephyr opened late because of winds, operated for barely more than an hour, and closed and stayed closed the rest of the day. The sailing ship Columbia, which was, you know, pinch hitting for the riverboat, which was under refurbishment, also on Sunday, it came out late because of a technical issue, but ran for less than 2 hours before it too retired for the rest of the day because of wind. Obviously, if a ride comes out and runs and then stops and I haven't ridden it, that's an automatic fail. Because Monday was still going to be under this red flag, you know, high wind, low humidity condition, and two of those rides operated for a very small portion of their operating day before shutting down for wind on Sunday, I went, okay, I need to throw all of my carefully cultivated plans in the trash and reprioritize these wind-sensitive rides and play defense against the wind so that I'm not automatically eliminated by them running for an hour and then shutting down before I can get to them.
So I think you went after some of those wind-sensitive rides, and then that just threw your strategy off too much.
Exactly, so. Yeah. I went for, you know, I made the hop to California Adventure earlier than I'd planned so that I could make sure to get Zephyr and other stuff down, even though a lot of the rides that I ended up doing at California Adventure wouldn't really build a wait for a little bit longer, and I could have done some more stuff over at Disneyland without a wait, but I was anxious to go get Zephyr done, and then anxious to then hop back and get the Columbia done. At that point, I ended up having too many rides left at the end of the day that were going to have long waits. And even with that, by the time I called it, just the ride times alone for what I had left were not looking good, because I think I still had Nemo, I had Pirates. Both of those are 20-minute long rides.
All right, so we've made it. We've made it to the beginning of your attempt. I think we should pause and go recap your attempt. But before we do that, I want to ask you, we're recording this a full week after your attempt. How do you feel right now?
I surprisingly didn't feel like super sore or super dead like right after. I think somehow just doing 4 days straight of activity just kept me loose. But now, you know, a week later, I've got, you know, some aches and things that have kind of settled in. Knees are, shins are still a little tender, but overall, not too worse for wear. Yeah, it feels similar to kind of what I did after my August, not quite back-to-backs. But yeah, overall, it feel pretty good.
Good. Well, let's recap your run, the successful run. And so these will be all times Eastern. I'm just going to run through it real quick. You started, of course, at Disneyland, and you start, as many Disneyland runs do, at Peter Pan's Flight, and that was at 10.05 a.m. Eastern. You ride quite a few rides. In fact, you ride 16 rides at Disneyland proper, ending at Main Street Vehicles at 1 before you do your hop to the Golden Zephyr at California Adventure. You get all the way up to 32 rides. I think in the recap here, you this Monsters, Inc., was that actually at 6:43, or was that like a misclick in the app?
No, it was down, so I had to hop back for it after it came back up.
Oh, okay. So that's not a misclick. So yeah, you did it a lot. You went back for 3 rides at Disneyland, went to hop back to DCA for 1 ride, then back to Disneyland to finish things up. I think the big problem here is that you had to get Haunted Mansion by 8 was your goal. I think you wanted to leave by 8. You get on it at 11.09 p.m. Eastern, which would have been 8.09 p.m. Pacific time. So you were a little behind, so we're going to bring that up. What's interesting is that you hopped from Disneyland, which shows up in Monorail Coral's Excellent Theme Park Watch app as blue, to the other blue park, Magic Kingdom, at 6:57 a.m., epic park hop, very good time. I think you did a great job. I think you should give a little bit of a shout out to Delta for really driving you there, right?
Delta helped for sure. We got there early, but I do also owe a shout out of thanks. RJ at Rudy J. Prusa. I don't know if that's exactly how that's supposed to be pronounced, but I posted an inquiry asking which parking deck at MCO is best, and he suggested the new C deck, and I was able to find a parking spot on the same level as the train that goes to the terminal, 2 rows away from the entrance to the train. When I landed Wednesday morning, I took the little tram from the gates to the terminal, walked out, made a left-hand turn, jumped on the other tram from the terminal to the C deck. 3.5 minutes later, I was at the C deck structure, walked out, threw my bags in the trunk of my car, jumped in the car, and was gone. And that really, really helped. As you can see, I was able to make it onto the Main Street vehicles at 6:57, and I was getting off of the vehicles just in front of Tomorrowland, a hair before Rope Drop. So it could not have worked out any more beautifully. From there, Rope dropped the Astro Orbiter and got a Zen ride. Only person on it.
Oh, so that nice. Sounds like traffic cooperated as well.
Traffic cooperated. Just everything went it went as smoothly as you could have possibly hoped it to go.
Great.
That was a fantastic start to a day that came after a not so great end of the day before. But I will let you get back to the recap.
Well, can I ask right quick, did you have what your total flight time was the actual flight time? Did you keep up with how long the flight itself turned out to be?
I know,
because I mean, you know, they give an estimate, of course, and whether you have a headwind or a tailwind figures into that. It sounds like you might have had a tailwind. It would have helped you out.
Yeah, so I know we were supposed to get in. So it was supposed to be 10:20 p.m. takeoff to 6:03 arrival. I know we got in before 6.
Okay, yeah.
We were ahead of forecast, and yeah. I was able to get off quickly and get going quickly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on a flight that long, what direction the wind is can make a half-hour difference. I mean, that's
absolutely
huge.
Yeah. And so, like you said, you landed, you grailed Magic Kingdom, got out of there by 11:12 a.m., your last board was Carousel of Progress at 11:12.
Right.
Hopped to Epcot, Grail Epcot, go to Animal Kingdom, get everything done but Flight of Passage, then hop to Hollywood Studios, grail that, and then come back and get Flight of Passage at 10:09 p.m. Eastern Time for the very first Every Ride Coast to Coast completion. Hats off to you, sir. I'm sure it was easy. You made it look so easy. There was no problems whatsoever.
Everything was smooth.
Everything was smooth like peanut butter.
Yeah. So I think that the big thing to talk about on your first day is really at the end, right? And that's what was going on with Haunted Mansion and what was your thoughts? And you sort of had to play around that. So were you trying to get Haunted? When were you wanting to get Haunted Mansion in originally?
So I had a Haunted Mansion Fast Pass. That was the very first thing that I pulled when I tapped in just before 7 a.m. Pacific. I pulled an 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. Haunted Mansion Fast Pass, and that was going to be one of my first things that I went to. My goal was to get to it somewhere around when I did my Jungle and Pirates. I was actually planning to either skip Pirates and go do Mansion or do Pirates and then try to beg my way into a little extra grace, because I would have been a couple minutes past the end of the normal grace period. But it went down and converted. And Mansion had been having issues the whole time that I had been out there. On Sunday or Monday, Mansion had gone up and down a bunch, and then I finally was getting on it, and we get off the stretching room elevator, and the whole area after that is just crammed with people. And I hate it when they do that, but it's just full of people, and then we just don't move. Yeah. And then we start moving, we move a little bit, and then we stop again. And we eventually move a little bit more, and then we stop. And then finally, I'm in sight of the load area, and I can see that they're just sending empty car after empty car after empty car, just dozens of empties. And then they load people, and then they might load 8 or 10 or 12 doom buggies, and then it's just empties and empties and empties and empties and empties and empties. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? And I finally asked, and I guess they were having some kind of massive audio issue with the narration not working in a significant number of the doom buggies. And so that was just annihilating capacity. I was like, oh, golly gee willikers. So definitely wanted to get on it early on Tuesday, and of course it goes down and my fast pass converts. And so then at that point I go, okay, even though I want to do this early, it's also important for me to go ahead and hop now so that I can go get all the stuff on the pier and around the pier, you know, because the Zephyr's wind sensitive. I'm still somewhat concerned about that. Inside Out Emotional Whirlwind and Pixar Pal Around, those tend to build to a good 20 or 30 minute wait and then stay there most of the day. So I definitely wanted to get those knocked out before they got too bad. I had a fast pass for Midway Mania, then pulled another fast pass for Incredicoaster. So I wanted to get Mansion done, but once I had a converted multi, I was like, okay, there's still tons of time in the day. I'll come back and get it later. That ended up proving to be more difficult than originally anticipated.
Yeah, so you get on space at 7:21 p.m., I should say. You wanted to leave by 8. You walk up to Mansion, and it's down. What's going through your mind? What are you thinking? Are you starting to try to come up with a backup to the backup? Are you panicking? What's going through your head right here? Are you thinking, I'm going to hate Haunted Mansion for the rest of my life now?
Well, for that, I actually have to roll back even a little bit farther before that. When I did my run Sailing Ship Columbia to Big Thunder to Indy, I was planning to then go hit Mansion right then before hopping back over for Monsters, but Mansion was down then. So I went back for Monsters, and I came back and did the monorail in, went up and did Toontown, and then I was going to go, I was planning to go Star Tours, single rider space, grab a fast pass for Buzz, and then railroad around and get Mansion. But space went down, and then it came right back up after I was already on the railroad. So then I was like, well, I guess I got to come back and do it later. So I took the railroad around, that was Ride 41, and I get off the railroad and I go to Mansion at 5:15 or something like that Pacific time. And I get in line for Mansion with my Fast Pass, and I get 20 steps up the Fast Pass, you know, path, and they shut the gates down behind me because the ride's down. And I'm like, well, crap, you know, it's just gone down. It's going to be a huge mess. I stand there for a little while. There's not really a lot of movement. And I decide to just go ahead and bail on Mansion there and circle back and do it later. Because at that point, I still had Pooh and Splash and Smuggler's Run. And then I needed to go get Buzz and Space. I was like, okay, well, let me go at least go do Splash and Pooh while this is down. And then I can come back. So that's what I did. I bailed. They gave me my multi back, and then I went and did Splash and Poo, and I came back because Mansion was back up, and so I rush over there, and I get to Mansion just as they've gone down again and shut the gates, won't let anybody in line. So at that point, I go, okay, well, the only thing that's even on this side of the park now is Smuggler's Run. Let me go deal with whatever that line's going to be. It ended up taking a half an hour to do single rider for that. I get done with that and come back, still down. And I'm asking, they're like, I'm like, you know, when's this going to be back up? And the thing was, they were down, but they were still running people through it. I'm like, what the heck? And what they told me was they're having an issue with one of the stretching elevators. So they were down to one stretching elevator, and there was a major show feature of the ride that wasn't working, that was considered to be an impactful to the experience, but they were running the entire queue through the ride to get everybody cleared through the queue, on it, off of it, and out of there, and then they were going to close and try to fix the issues. They would not let me in the line, even like, I don't care if it's a diminished experience, I don't care if, you know, whatever animatronic or whatever else isn't working, I'll still ride it. It didn't matter. There was no getting in the line at that point. They said, we're running everybody through, and then it'll probably be another 20 or 30 minutes after that. I'm like, okay, fine. So I hustle over to Tomorrowland. I had a Space Fast Pass that I'd pulled earlier in the day as an insurance Fast Pass, just in case single rider was backed up or something happened, and I ended up needing it. And that was like for 7:15 or so. The window to pull another Fast Pass open, and I was able to pull a Buzz for a near instant return time and use that. So I did Buzz, and then I went and I checked in for Space. I got on Space, got off of Space. I'm like, okay, let's go get that Mansion. And I go over to Mansion, and it's still down. And that's when things start to get, okay, now what?
See, you made a mistake there. Like, what you're supposed to do is go on Twitter and declare that you're going to go to the ride and it's going to be open.
Yeah.
That always works for me.
the blind hop declarative strategy. I did not think to try that. So maybe next time in the moment, I will.
On Twitter and say, I'm going to this ride now. It's down, but it will be up when I get there. And it'll work. Yeah. It works. Guaranteed.
I don't quite remember it quite that confidently, but I'm just saying.
Oh, no. Hindsight 2020 worked perfectly, guaranteed. 5% of the time, it works every time.
There we go. Right. So, like, this stress had been building with this Mansion thing. But, you know, I'm still like, okay, you know, like they said it wasn't going to be too long. You know, I've still got a little bit of time to play with. At this point, it's only 7:25, 7:30. It's like I still got a half an hour. You know, I'm still okay. And then, yeah, I'm checking with the CMs, like, you know, hey, like, what's going on? Like, what's the deal? Yeah, and they're not really having it. And they've got, like, this, like, you can't hover in front of the ride. Keep the paths clear. We have to keep it clear because we've got Fantasmic, even though Fantasmic's not for 2 more hours. You know, we got to keep all the walkways clear, keep all this, you know. And so security's like, you got to listen. You got to move over here out of the way. And then you move out of the way, and then somebody else is like, you can't stand here either. You know, it's just, I'm stressing out. I'm freaking out. I'm like, you know, looking for, you know, any signs of life, you know, any of this stuff. And I'm starting to, you know, blood pressure's going up. I'm getting antsy. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here. You know, how long can I actually afford to stay here? 8 o'clock was kind of my go or no-go time because I've got to get out of the park, then I got to walk all the way through downtown Disney to get to Paradise Pier, get my bags from bag check, take an Uber to the airport. That's probably going to take around an hour, especially in LA traffic. Then I got to get through TSA and get to the gate, and they close boarding 15 minutes before the flight takes off. So I'm like, you know, adding all these times up, and I'm like, I really need to be out of there by 8. But, you know, okay, traffic is looking like it might be a little bit less, might only be 45 minutes instead of an hour. You know, obviously that could change on a moment's notice, but I'm like, okay, like maybe I've got a little bit more time to play with. You know, maybe I can cut a little bit closer on the flight. You know, I'm like, so I'm like, I'm arguing with myself back and forth on how much time I actually have to play with. And then, you know, I'm pestering these poor CMs, you know, for any hope or any sign of life. And one of them takes pity on me and is like, okay, like, let me see what I can find out. And he goes inside and asks around, makes a little bit of a nuisance of himself on my behalf, for which I'm eternally grateful. And then comes back out and he's like, man, like they're thinking that they might not be back up until 8:30 or 9. I'm just like, oh, because there's no way that I can wait until 8:30 or 9 and have any prayer of making that flight. I'm just like, what do I do?
Did you ever think of abandoning your bags?
No. Yeah, that wasn't an option. Like, you know, I mean, I have my computer and other stuff. Yeah, that was just not gonna, that wasn't gonna fly.
Did you ever think of renting a helicopter?
also no. I did not go that far. Yeah. The reality was, like, I had backup plans for if I didn't make it on Monday. Then it's just, okay, you just punt and move it to Tuesday. But I had not pre-decided what I was going to do if I was one ride short with something that was broken down, how long I was willing to sit and wait, and what I was going to do. You know, like, where exactly is my do or die, you know, and do I do or do I die, you know? So, like, in this moment, I'm going, okay, so I can stick around and wait until this opens and get ride 47 and complete DLR and miss the flight and move the flight again and eat another change fee or whatever, because, yeah, if I skip the ride and make the flight, then what's really the point of taking a red-eye to Orlando? Because, you know, running the whole day tomorrow or the next day, it would be kind of meaningless without having completed the first half. So, like, I mean, maybe I mean, even if I take the red eye and I decide I'm not going to do it, my hotel's not going to be ready. So, like, what am I even going to do? So, like, I'm all these things are running through my head. And honestly, I don't know what a good answer to this is. Like, what do you do in that situation? Yeah, I'm kind of curious, you know, what y'all would have done, you know, faced with the choice of abandon, you know, the quest or try to finish the quest, but at the cost of the flight, or like, you know, what are y'all's thoughts on that situation?
I mean, it is tough. I feel like I probably, if I ever run this, I probably wouldn't have the flexibility to push a day. So it's either going to be kind of an all or nothing. I'm going to have to put it in whatever day I've planned. And so I guess at that point, you got to look for something. Like, if you hadn't gotten it, you'd had to either look for some other reason to run, like getting, you know, people give me pledges. Pledge, forgive kids the world, so I'll keep running. Otherwise, yeah. I mean, it's, you've done DLR, you've done Disney World.
Unless vacation Jason steps in, and then there could be, like, you know, renting a private plane would be an option. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Vacation Jason gets kind of loopy and starts doing all sorts of stuff. Yes. I would have stolen Walt's plane from the backlot tour and taken that cross country.
And I was just thinking, when you were talking about the luggage, I could totally see Jason just abandoning the luggage. I could totally see that.
That's why he brought it up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm serious. Yeah, yeah. Not just in a joking manner.
Yeah, I mean, and I do think that there is something to be said for traveling lighter when doing this. Like, I think I saw a picture from Kenny on his runs. He may have done the whole thing with just a backpack that he was able to take in the parks and on the rides with him. Versus, you know, I mean, I was also, you know, traveling for several more days and, you know, had more stuff.
Well, so not quite. He as also easy. Lives in the Orlando area, right?
That helps. All that being said, all these options and things are running around in my head, and I'm stressing out, freaking out, and I get to the point where I decide I can give myself until 8:10 or 8:15 at the latest to be getting into and onto the ride, because Haunted Mansion at its core is a 13-minute experience, you know, all told, gate to gate. Even when it's a walk-on, that's how long it usually takes, assuming no stoppages or any of that. And I'm going, you know, that's going to put me getting off of the ride around 8:30, and then I've just got to hustle. Like, you know, but that's the absolute latest that I could stand around there and still ride the ride and have any prayer of making my flight. So, you know, I'm in that. That's my kind of, you know, absolute limit there. And I'm in the middle of doing a live stream where I'm going, like, I'm just completely at a loss. I can give myself 5 or 10 more minutes, and then I've just gotta bail to go get on this plane. You know, I don't know what else to do. I don't have any other plans. I don't know, you know, whatever, you know, this, and just, like, I'm just at a loss for words and all that. And I'm in the middle of this sad, depressing live stream. And the CM I was talking to earlier comes, walks over to me, taps me on the shoulder, whispers into my ear, it's about to open. And just like that, you know, everything changes. Because I've got a fast pass, it's a multi, so I can get myself positioned to be one of the first people on the ride. We're still within that 5 or 10 extra minutes that I gave myself. Like, if this thing actually opens, like, we're in business. And so at the drop of that hat, it went from utter despair to, holy cow, like, this thing might actually happen. And just the elation of that moment, you know, cannot be, you know, understated. And sure enough, you know, get over into position right in front of the gates, right in front of the tap stiles. They open the gates up, you know, they let me tap in. I tap in. I'm the first person in the fast pass line. There's a cast member pacing standby, tells me to stay with her. So I kind of slowly walk. I get to the merge point, and then it's okay, you know, fast pass and standby blending together past the merge point into the stretching room. And I get myself into that stretching room. There's a technician from Otis Elevators, you know, there with his tool bag and his badge on and all that. And I thank him profusely for getting the elevator back working. We do the stretching room, get down to the bottom. I'm the first person off the elevator, straight out, hustle over. I'm in the first Doom buggy that's occupied. First person on it, first person off of it. And we're at 47. What looked like utter despair is now victory.
Yeah, there's still a chance.
I feel like I can relate to that emotion a little bit.
A little bit, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's basically how I felt on that day that I completed. Woo. Utter despair to, yeah. Elation. Wow, I might pull this off. Like, your chances of completing go from like 2% to 90% all of a sudden or something like that. It's like, oh my.
It's like when you're watching a football game and they have like the win probabilities, and then just something completely ridiculous happens and it goes from a 2% to like a 98%, where just the whole game flipped the other way around on a, yeah, it's one of those things.
So, wow, you made it. I think that's probably, I mean, we were recording the podcast while you were going through this saga, and I started the podcast by saying, it doesn't look like you're going to make it. And I think I said that another time. I don't know if Adam put this all in the recording. I didn't have it listened back to that particular recording. And then I'm like, then we pause because I'm like, he made it. And I don't know. Did you leave that in the recording, Adam? Like, we had a discussion. Like, he got on.
I seem to recall that it was all there.
Yeah, I think parts of it were released. Yeah, I know the part where it finished was.
Yeah. So we were sort of shadow blogging it as well, because that was happening during our recording time. It was pretty exciting. So we've already talked about the flight. I think the Walt Disney World side of things. I mean, yeah, you did the typical. A lot of the typical stuff. I mean, you did start at Magic Kingdom rather than Hollywood Studios, mainly because you didn't get there till 7 o'clock. You had pretty good times. I don't think anything stood out as like super bad there, except for the fact that the only thing that seemed that was a little bit of like, okay, big decision point was when you get to Animal Kingdom, it looks like, and you have to decide, am I going to have to buy a party ticket, right? Because you weren't able to, you weren't thinking you were going to be able to fit in Flight of Passage and everything at Hollywood Studios. Tell us a little bit about how that came to be, and do you think, was there anywhere in there that you think maybe you could have fit it in, maybe you couldn't? Like, what was the decision there like?
So, yeah, so the big thing was the Flight of Passage has apparently been having some difficulties, and we've seen a few days recently where it looks like they've been down a theater, and wait times are way longer than they would ordinarily be, and the fast passes are not being dropped at the drops. On this particular Wednesday, that didn't happen. So I was checking, and nothing. It was one of those things where I was like, okay, you know, because I'd seen the same thing happen to Kenny the previous week, where he couldn't get a drop, and of course, he had to catch a flight, so, yeah, and there was no party that night, so, like, that wasn't an option for him, I don't believe. But for me, when I was watching that live, I went, if that happens to me, the party tickets are allowed under the Every Ride rules. You know, I'm not going to let one ride stand in the way of this completion because I won't spend a little bit of money on a party ticket. So that was my fallback plan if that happened to me on my run. So I get to Animal Kingdom, I'm going through basically everything else, you know, I get to the next, you know, drop time and there's again no drop. And I'm on completely the opposite side of the park when the Flight of Passage standby times start dropping precipitously. We're talking like they were over 2 hours, you know, then they drop to 90 and then to 70 and then to 50. And then at one point they get down to 40 minutes standby. And I've got, you know, people blowing me up going, Flight of Passage is only 40 minutes standby. Like, you can go do it. Like, you have time. Like, you can fit that in. And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know, you know, because, you know, wait times, you tend to lag reality by a little bit. You know, by the time I get over there, it's probably going to be longer and, you know, just all that kind of thing. And it's like, well, but yeah, I mean, if you can go do this, then, you know, you're not going to need the party ticket. You know, I certainly would want to, you know, wouldn't want to have to use a party ticket to complete. I'd rather do it the other way. And I'm like, well, I mean, okay, you know, I'll go check it out. And I get to it. It's posted at 50. The cast member at the entrance says that it's posted at 50, but he thinks it's probably only 40. I'm like, okay. I get up into the line, and I get to the back of where the line is, and it's way further back than I would have ever expected a wait that short to be. And the only way that I would ever imagine it's that far back with that short of a wait is if somewhere inside they're just not running through extended queues, or they're just there's just no fast pass and they're just pulsing people through really crazy. And I asked
and the cast member what time was this that you were in that line? Like, about what time?
This was 6:15. So I got in. I think I got into line at 6:16. I hustled from Triceratops Spin over there, and I'm at the back of the line. And I asked the cast member, I'm like, are you sure? Like, because you're posted at 50. See him outside, said he thought it was 40. This feels way longer than that. And she says, oh, yeah, no, like it's probably only 35 or 40. You know, there's you know, people backed up inside taking pictures of stuff. And I'm like, I mean, if you say so, like, I mean, I don't really know this ride, but this feels like it's way longer than that. But okay, like, I'll trust this. I got two people telling me, I mean, even if it's 50, or even if it's an hour, I feel like I'm still okay. You know, because it's, you know, 6:16, you know, give me an hour on that. You know, I'm still getting to studios before 8. You know, studios was open till 10. So I'm like, I'm still okay, even if I have to wait an hour. We get 30, 35 minutes in, and I'm still nowhere even remotely close to being on this. And I realize this line isn't moving at a pace that it needs to be. The wait time that's been posted has gone from the 40 that it was when I was headed that way up to the 50 that it was when I got in line. It went up to 70. It went up to 85. It went up to 95. By that point, it was posted at 95, and I said, I don't feel like I'm going to be on this ride within another 30 and maybe even another 45 minutes at the rate that it's going. I cannot stand here and wait in this line.
Did a theater go down while you were in line?
I don't think so. I just think that the way Disney does wait times is fundamentally flawed, because they send people through with the little red cards, but by the time that person with the red card gets to the front of the line, the wait in the back of the line is completely different than when they got into line. So the wait that their red card reports has no bearing on what it is once they're on the ride. You know, unless it's a walk-on, at which point, okay, yeah, then it's accurate. But when I got into line at 50, where the crowd was backed up was the same spot the back of the line was when I left the line 30, 35 minutes later with it posted at 95. Like, the back of the crowd was the same exact spot in the queue. You know, and at that point you go, okay, well, we assume that maybe it was 95. I couldn't have stood a 95-minute wait and still been able to do everything at Studios. So at that point, I had no choice but to bail, go to Studios, buy the party ticket. Now, you could argue that if I had hustled out of Animal Kingdom right after Triceratop and made a quick hop to Studios, I had a Slinky Fast Pass. That's the hardest one to get at Studios. And everything else, you know, I've been able to get good stuff showing up. So, like, you could argue that I might have been able to make it to Studios and rush through Studios, make a quick hop back, and maybe make it back to get into line for Flight of Passage just before 9. It would have been tight. It would have required me to really hustle at Studios and to get some lucky breaks. But you could argue that it could have been physically possible and not needed the party ticket.
Yeah, I could see that, because you finished Studios, you got on Tower Terror at 9:18. So let's say you back out 30, 40 minutes there. It would have been rough. It would have been close. You'd need some very epic hops right there.
Yeah. I needed one of three things. I either needed Flight of Passage to actually be that short of a wait, or bail and just obliterate Studios super fast and then have really great hops. But again, by this point, on the fourth day of some kind of challenge running, you know, on 3.5 hours of sleep on a plane, the notion of sprinting around Studios and then also needing to sprint from my car back at Animal Kingdom all the way to Flight of Passage, potentially at the last possible moment, the chances of me actually having enough energy to do that would have been slim. So, like, we can say, like, mathematically it might have been on the edge of being possible. I don't think I would have physically had it in me to do it. So I think absent a fast pass or the ride actually being close to the wait time that was posted, realistically my only viable option was the party ticket.
I think you made the right call there. Right. I mean, with it being in the rules, you pick it up and it was basically you were going to get it minus catastrophic breakdown of something. And you'd already completed Haunted Mansion, so everything should have been fine.
Right.
Yes. I mean, now, I will say I didn't realize until after I was already committed down this path that it is allowed within the rules, but it's actually scored as a separate category altogether. So that part was kind of a bummer. It doesn't get an asterisk. It does get its whole a whole separate category. So that was kind of a bummer to find out.
Well, you know, I think at some point down the line, it might be different. I think that if we're really talking about, like, the rules of using the party tickets, me personally, I think it's great that you had that option. I think for the coast to coast, it actually makes a bit of sense. But for, like, Disney World, Disneyland in general, you don't usually need that, which is why I guess they're scoring it in a separate category. Like, people can complete without doing a party typically. But I think in the future, it's going to be different. I think as they keep adding rides, eventually it might be necessary to have party tickets.
Well, the other thing that they're doing is they're using parties instead of giving extra magic hours, because they've realized that they can get the average guest to pay an extra $100 or $150 bucks a person, you know, for a few extra hours. So instead of staying open late, why would we do that for free when we can get people to pay? You know, I think we're going to see that as a more and more common part of Disney's business model.
So, yeah, I do not put an asterisk on this run. You're still the first to complete. I think it was great. I mean, you did pull off Hollywood Studios and you did get back. I am curious. I saw you. We were, of course, watching you live as you were getting on the Flight of Passage. But I was curious, after you finished, did you ride it again? Did you get something to eat? What'd you do when you finished? And before you say that, I was also curious, how loud did you yell Siva Ko as you rode your 94th ride in 2 days? How loud did you yell that out into the theater?
I did holler a nice Siva Ko, but before I got into line, I was in the middle of a live stream and I walked by one of the little carts that they have because, hey, like, you're paying $150 for the party. Like, sure, we'll give you a free, you know, bottle of water and an ice cream bar or whatever. And so I was like, I'll grab one of these. So I grabbed a strawberry popsicle thing. So like I'm in line doing a live stream talking and I'm just eating this popsicle. Because that's the other thing that people don't talk about is, like, it's hard to, like, eat on these runs.
Oh, yeah.
Tuesday, like, I had a breakfast bar to start the day and a Coke. And then I had, when I was over at the Pixar Pier, I grabbed an Angry Dog. And that was all that I ate on Tuesday. Like, that was it. Like, I had a breakfast bar and then an Angry Dog and some chips, you know, around lunchtime. And then beyond that, it was just water, Coke, and Powerade. And then I get to Wednesday morning and I had a breakfast bar mid morning. I think I was on Small World when I realized, oh yeah, I have this thing in my pocket. I should probably eat this. And then I didn't have anything else until I was at Epcot, and fortunately they were still doing Food and Wine, and you can jump into one of those, food booth lines, grab something and kind of go. And I was able to do that. I grabbed some jerk chicken, which was one of my favorites from my previous foray to Food and Wine. And then I was like, hey, I'm still kind of hungry. I wanted to try the scallop dish. So I wandered over, did that, got 3 or 4 bites into it, decided this was so good I needed another one, circled back and caught in line again and got a second one. That was between Grand Fiesta and Figment, in case anyone's wondering. But totally worth it. But that was all I ate. And so then, you know, I get to a strawberry popsicle thing and it's like, okay, yeah, I'll have a strawberry popsicle and I will enjoy it.
How many more strawberry popsicles did you have after?
I only had the one, you know, and I only rode it one time. Maybe I would have ridden it again if I didn't have to, like, go all the way around and walk all the way back up through the queue and then sit there waiting to load into a pre-show room and then sit and watch both pre-shows. Like, those pre-shows are agonizing, man. Like, they're really bad.
I can imagine after 36 hours, that's not how you want to end your day standing there.
I had the privilege of going through the Flight of Passage one twice because I had to get evac'd and they made us watch it a second time, both pre-shows. So talk about torture.
I'm so sorry.
So the best way, I have done Animal Kingdom After Hours, if you're not for a challenge and you don't want to sit through pre-shows, you can basically just ride Everest over and over and over and over
again. And if I hadn't been as exhausted as I was, and if Everest wasn't literally on the complete opposite side of the park, I would have totally loved to just sit there and marathon Everest, because I love Everest. But at that point in time, the last thing I wanted to do was walk all the way to Everest. So I basically just left.
$150 well spent.
Yeah, I went by guest relations, got my I'm celebrating buttons, and then went and collapsed in my hotel.
Well, you did it. You made it. It sounds like you had a few scares, but I'm happy that you made it. I know you and I have talked a lot about the challenge, both on Twitter and direct messages and all that, so I'm very happy for you. I'm also happy that another Atlanta person got to be the first one to complete, you know, those of us Atlanta folks. It's not always the locals that get there first. The last question I'd have for you is, what's next? Or is there more challenges coming? What's 2020 for Nathan look like? Are we still running Parkeology, running every ride? Or what are you going to do?
Well, part of my challenge at this point is like what's left, you know? I mean, I've got multiple completions at Disneyland and Disney World. I've done Oxygen Free. I've done every attraction at Disneyland in a day. I've done coast to coast now. I've done back to backs. You know, like I could keep doing it, you know, I mean, as things change, you know, oh, we get one more ride or there's one less ride or the hours are different or whatnot. But at a certain point it starts to, you know, go, okay, well now what? And,
yeah.
And I don't know that I really necessarily feel a great burning desire to run Disney World again. Yeah. You know, I've made no secret of how much I prefer Disneyland to Disney World as a resort in general, and especially, you know, when doing, you know, the challenges, I find that I'm able to enjoy the rides when I'm in California, and when I'm in Orlando, it's just stress.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I think at this point, I'm probably done with the big challenge stuff. I don't think there's really anything left to do or to prove or whatnot. But the thing I would love...
Well, there's raising money for the kids. Well, you could always do a
absolutely
little, show up every once in a while.
Absolutely. And please go give to Give Kids the World. I think we raised like $1,300 or something like that from this coast-to-coast run.
Wow, that's very good.
A huge thank you to everybody that supported that. But the big thing that I do want to do, hopefully, you know, in this coming spring, I want to take my dad out to California and run Disneyland with him. I think that would be a really fun thing to do. Yeah, it'd be my first run with a partner, but I think that would be a good kind of, you know, father-son bonding experience. And so that's something I'd like to do maybe after Rise of the Resistance opens. We'll see if that's going to live up to the hype. Beyond that, I mean, my pass expires in March. I don't know that I have a burning need to drop, you know, an arm, a leg, a kidney, and a firstborn child on another one. I think I'm looking forward to some of the new roller coasters that the SeaWorld and Busch Gardens family of parks are planning to open next year. So I may go back to kind of more of that and less of the Disney thing. Maybe let Disney percolate for a few more years, get a few new attractions before I kind of come back and revisit, because it's kind of an expensive hobby.
It is an expensive hobby.
So
it's
especially when you have to change flights.
Yeah.
And
you don't have to answer this question, but did you keep track of how much it costs to do this?
I have not actually added up all the numbers, but it was quite a lot.
I can imagine.
Now, part of the question is how much do you separate, you know, because I did have a couple of days out in California before I actually started the attempt.
Right.
You know, do you separate that? You know, right. I mean,
yeah, you just put the cost of one night.
All told, it was a lot. It's never cheap to stay on property in California because they don't believe in value resorts.
Right. Don't have room for them.
Yeah. So that's a big thing. It was helpful that I already had my Premier Pass, which gets me into both coasts without any extra costs. So it was really just the flight and the hotels.
Yeah.
I think I spent $100 on Ubers.
At Orlando, did you drive or Uber?
Oh, I drove. So that was one of the things was I had to drive from Atlanta to Orlando on Saturday, and then I just drove directly to MCO and flew to California from there rather than trying to fly from Atlanta and then ending up in Orlando and having to be reliant on other transportation. Because, again, one of the big things is what do you do with your bags? If I had relied on Uber or something else, it's I have to go to a hotel first and drop my bags.
Right.
And then they have to sit there and then I have to retrieve them. I wasn't about to try to figure out how to do that and do it quickly when I was like, I can just drive myself, drop them in the trunk, and then I'm good.
I have an idea of what I would have done, or I would have been one option. I would have scheduled the Magical Express since it was free. That way they take your luggage and deliver it to your hotel, and you just wouldn't even had to bother picking it up. Yeah.
Will they take your stuff without you on it?
Yeah. Because it's tagged. It's tagged, and it may not even be traveling on the same bus that you're on, truthfully, because it's tagged. Okay. It's just going to make it to your hotel room before the day's over. So.
That would be something to consider for the next person doing this. I don't know if they're set up to accept baggage at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, they have the. Yeah, I mean, I have it running a lot.
I don't know what that would look like, but I would suggest if somebody were interested in doing this, that it might be worth checking into.
Well, I just know that I have used Magical Express one time, and they sent us the tags and stuff for our luggage. We took it to the airport, of course, and then of course it already had that on it. When we landed at MCO, next time we saw our luggage was once they had it delivered to our hotel, and that was after we had gone to the parks and stuff that day. So I don't know exactly at what point it arrived, but it was sitting there waiting on us. So, yeah.
So I'm just curious then, I guess the only way to get you back out on the course would either be for a fundraising day, or maybe one day we could do a day just for people who have completed and race. We could all race.
Okay. Well, racing is fun. I think I would like to maybe drum up some more interest in the DLR All Attractions Challenge. I think that's something that could be fun. I know I certainly enjoyed doing that because, you know, so many times we do, you know, all the rides, but there's other cool things at these parks. And so, you know, doing that kind of forced me to go try some other stuff that I hadn't done before. And I ended up, like, one of my new favorite things now is the Animation Academy. I thought that was really, really cool. And since the one in Florida, now you have to go take the Wildlife Express train to get to and all that. Having one easily accessible at California Adventure, that was kind of cool. I think adding fun wrinkles versus adding things just to make it difficult for the sake of making it difficult. Like I wouldn't try an oxygen free run again, because in a lot of ways it's making it difficult just to make it difficult.
Yeah. Well, if you listen to the one where we interviewed Shane and Christina on the original oxygen free, if you believe Ted, they had it easy because Christina like had a chef in the back seat with a full buffet and they ate prime rib. The joke is that, of course, Christina is always very well prepared for the challenges. So if you have that, maybe oxygen free is not so bad. If you just have like the prime rib station.
Okay. If you're eating Munster Paul out of the back of a car, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, when I did my oxygen free in California, I didn't wait for hardly anything, except I got stuck waiting an hour for Soarin' the first day, another hour for Midway Mania. And let me just say, waiting that long for rides that you don't particularly like is abysmal.
Yeah.
It's one thing to wait I'll wait an hour for Guardians because I like Guardians. And, you know, the queue is not a steel hanger thing with a ramp that has a line that doesn't actually move, you know. But yeah, those were like really miserable. And after I was done, I was like, I could do this again, but I really, really just don't want to wait an hour for Soarin'.
Yeah.
I don't think there's very many things I would say I would like to wait an hour for, truthfully.
Yeah.
or would wait an hour for.
There's not many rides or ride experiences. And I mean, I've been to a lot of parks, ridden a lot of roller coasters and a lot of other things, a lot of Disney stuff. There's not a lot out there that I feel is really actually worth an hour wait or longer.
Yeah.
And it amazes me what people are willing to do when they visit these parks. Because I could never imagine a 3-hour wait for a ride.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some of the queues have interesting things in them, and that helps. I thought the Flight of Passage regular queue is actually quite stunning as far as looking at most of it and everything. But
it's stunning until it doesn't move.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. And then I think I would just be dreading knowing that I have to have a pre-show in a little while. That's what I would be dreading.
Yeah, I don't wait in line. I don't believe in it.
And there's been a couple of times when I've done that and I waited in a line and I'm like, you know what? FastPass was better.
Yeah, so it sounds like maybe we'll see you out on one of these days where you get to raise some more money for Give Kids the World. I'm very happy you were able to raise $1,300 plus and counting. So good job. Is there any final thoughts anybody wants to throw in?
I was actually going to say a minute ago when you said what challenge was next, did you ever consider the possibility of maybe doing this at one of the abroad parks as the next step, perhaps?
So I had the opportunity to visit the Tokyo Disney Resort last fall. The crowd calendar goes like blue and then green and then yellow and then orange and then red and then dark red and then black. And we were there on a day that was supposed to be a yellow day, but then it rained, which dropped it to a green day. And the wait times for the rides were still over an hour. For an hour to an hour and a half for all of the halfway decent ones. And they were still using paper ticket fast passes. That's changed now since then. But yeah, like you run the very first thing is you're rope dropping a fast pass queue, a fast pass kiosk. You don't rope drop a ride, you rope drop a fast pass kiosk. And then you go rush to a ride. But you know, sometimes you're waiting 20 or 30 minutes for a fast pass to scan your ticket in the machine to get the fast pass. The Japan parks are just a whole nother beast. And you can't even buy a ticket that lets you into both parks, Tokyo Disneyland and DisneySea, on the same day unless you buy a 3-day ticket, which starts with one day at one park, the second day at the other park, and then the third day you can get into both of them. Like, park hopping is not, it's not a thing because they're just so crowded. So I don't think that's really a viable option for Japan. Paris, maybe, I don't know, I haven't been there. I don't think it would be a huge challenge in Shanghai or Hong Kong, just because I don't think there's enough attractions to really make it be that hard with the right strategy. But again, I've not been there. Somebody did joke after I finished, you know, hey, next step, you know, catch a flight to Paris. Just kind of keep it going. But I was not quite prepared to do that one. Would I like to visit the international parks? I think it'd be nice.
Yeah.
But what I found in Japan was, it was nice, but because I don't speak Japanese and so much of the stuff is in Japanese and not catered to English, it was hard for me to follow along with things. Like the rides that were familiar, like the same thing that I have here in America, it's like, oh, okay, I know kind of what's going on, even if I don't understand the actual like dialogue. But the other rides that were unique, I was so lost that I think there really was something lost in translation for me. So I don't see the international thing being as huge of a pressing thing.
Well, I'm just going to have to get a Disneyland completion under my belt and an Every Ride Coast to Coast to catch up to you before I start considering that. But anyways, I feel like we've gotten a good feel for your run. I really appreciate that you were able to break it down with us and break down, of course, your other runs as well. I think you made a pretty successful year. If this was supposed to be the year of Parkeology for Nathan Firesheets, I would say it was a resounding success. You completed just about everything that's out there. I think someone put you out there as maybe a candidate for the Groot, right? The greatest runner of our time. So I'm sure maybe one day we'll have a podcast where we can just make everybody mad and start trying to make top fives, because that gets really controversial on Twitter real quick.
Yeah, I think there's certain people that have certain opinions, and yeah, I've heard from a handful of people, this was impressive or that was impressive, or you know, is great, but you know, they still have this other person. You know, I mean, ultimately, I think trying to rank and compare is difficult because things are so different. One thing that I do kind of, you know, think about is the same way that we do with, you know, football records. Like, you know, nobody remembers 5 years down the road, you know, that such and such football team only went, you know, 14-2 that year because they won three games off of flukes by bad calls by the referees or whatever, you know, and the record really shouldn't have been that or whatever. And I think the same holds true for challenge stuff as we get farther and farther removed. Yeah, because there have been days where, you know, maybe certain rides were closed for refurbishment, but the park hours were less, or days where somebody needs to use an after-hours ticketed event, or things like that. And I think ultimately all that's going to survive is that we've done it. And so I think...
I will remember it all.
Well, I appreciate that. But I think ultimately the biggest thing is... You know, yes, you know, there's an element of personal glory here, like, woo, we did a thing. But I think having the bigger purpose with the raising money for Give Kids the World is, I think, a more noble goal and cause than just saying, hey, I'm the best to ever do it. You know, go me.
I agree. Yeah. It's one of those things where you got a reason to keep running really helps. And I'm really happy that that's something that everybody's been able to do. Nathan, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. I'm glad we were able to snag your interview for this Coast to Coast Challenge. Maybe we'll see you around here in Atlanta, or even see you again at Disney World. Even though we live in the same city, I've only ever seen you at Disney World. So I think this is hopefully a great bonus episode for those of you listening and wanted to hear a little bit more. Nathan, I think you will be posting a recap video on your YouTube site sometime soon. Is that correct?
Yes. I've got all of my on-ride photos. I have some on-ride video. I have some of my live stream in the moment thoughts, and so I'm working to kind of compile that into a run summary. So I don't know exactly when that's going to be ready for release, but keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, give us your plugs. What's the YouTube channel and the Twitter and all that?
It's the same as my Twitter handle. It's A Coaster Story with underscores. So A_coaster_story. So that's my Twitter handle, and that's my YouTube as well. And I will link to the YouTube on my Twitter. I'll probably tweet it out.
All right. Well, so keep an eye out for that. And if you want to get more from us, you can always catch us in all of our other locations that we will go over now.
Yeah, we have a website, travelingwiththemouse.com, and our email address is podcast@travelingwiththemouse.com. And we also have a Patreon page, which is patreon.com/TWTM podcast.
We have social media, in which we have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at TWTM podcast. And if you would like, there's also a Spreadshirt store in which you can get your exclusive Traveling with the Mouse merchandise. That is shop.spreadshirt.com/TWTM podcast.
So this has been Jason, joined by Adam, John, and our esteemed guest, Nathan. We hope you enjoyed it. And we hope you will join us on our next trip.